Thank you very much. The meeting is official. Honourable members, we are going to take this opportunity handing over to our legal advice according to the appointment of the National Council for Correctional Services in terms of Section 83.2H of the Correctional Services Act, Act number 11 of 1998. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the chairpersons, members of the committees, colleagues and guests. My name is Suan Isaac and I'm a parliamentary legal advisor. The chairpersons of the committees requested that I prepare and present an opinion on the appointment of the National Council of Correctional Services in respect to members appointed in terms of Section 83.2H of the Correctional Services Act. I am given to understand that the members have had sight of the opinion prior to the meeting, so for sake of time, I'm not going to go and read through the entire opinion, but I will highlight certain key aspects in answering the questions that were posed to me. So the three aspects that I intend dealing with is, firstly, dealing with the validity of the appointments, secondly, the status and decisions taken and recommendations made by the National Commission, and thirdly, the recourse available to Parliament. Briefly, as way of background, we are aware that the Minister has written to the committees advising that the appointment process in terms of Section 83.2H of the Act was not adhered to. We are aware that the Act gives the Minister the power to appoint the National Council, and the Act sets out various steps or various members that are appointed. Specifically, in terms of Section 83.2H, it requires that four or more members, not in the full-time service of the state, appointed as representatives of the public in consultation with the relevant parliamentary committees. So we are aware that this consultation process did not take place. So the first question that is raised is, what is the status of the appointments? Are they legally valid? So in order to answer this question, you first need to look at the requirements of this particular provision, and the important point there is there needs to be in consultation, the appointments need to be made in consultation with a relevant parliamentary committee. The meaning of in consultation is not defined in the Act, but our courts have discussed this issue previously. If I've looked at the case of National Director of Public Prosecutions, and the court said in order for there to be a process of in consultation, there must be concurrence between the two parties. And this is different from a process of after consultation, where this does not demand that the decision maker is bound by the views of the person they're consulting with. But in consultation is a more stringent process. Similarly, in case of McDonald, the court has also said that there must be concurrence. So what have we gleaned from the above cases? That it is clear where a statute requires an in consultation process, there must be a meeting of the minds. There must be concurrence between the parties. The term in consultation is a more exacting standard. It means that it is more stringent. It requires more of the parties. One party doesn't have more power than the other. They both have to reach a decision jointly. They have to weigh the pros and cons and come to the final conclusion. So, as we've noted, the Minister did indicate that this has not been adhered to. What is the consequences of the ministers not adhering to this requirement in terms of the Act? Okay. In the case of National Director of Prosecution, we note that the court found a decision where there was a requirement in the Act that there be an in-consultation process, and this was not followed. The court said on this basis alone, because the parties failed to adhere to the empowering statutes, the decision that was not taken in consultation could not stand. In the case of McDonald's, the court similarly said that where Parliament has established a process that requires in consultation to take place, the Minister cannot bypass the process and choose an alternative process. So when parties are obliged to consult but fail to do so, they act outside the empowering statute. And it's clear from the cases that I've mentioned that this decision can be set aside solely on the basis that there was failure to act in consultation with the relevant committee. The next question that was put to me in respect to the consultation process is, can the committee now act retrospectively? Can they endorse the decision of the minister? It is my view that it's inherent in the meaning of the word, of the term in consultation, that this process is prospective. You cannot have a meeting of the minds. The committee cannot weigh the option, its options and determine the pros and cons of appointment if the minister already made the decision. So therefore, I don't think it would meet, it's my view that it doesn't meet the inherent meaning in consultation. Secondly, I note that the minister informed the committee 5 months after the appointment was made. So the National Council has already been sitting, it had made decisions, it acted under the impression that it was lawfully appointed. So to come and to say that it can consult after the fact doesn't give effect to the meaning of in consultation, because our decision to consult now will have no effect on the appointment. So further and lastly, the section in the Act does not empower Parliament or the committees to act retrospectively. We do not have the power to endorse the decision. The Act merely says the minister must act in consultation with the relevant committees. So there is no empowering provision that gives the committees the power to endorse the minister's decision retrospectively. So just to recap, I said that in consultation means there must be a meeting of the minds between the parties. The minister has admitted that he has failed to do so, and our courts have held in the past where such a consultation process has not been followed, such a decision may be declared invalid. And thirdly, with respect to the consultation process, it is my view that it cannot take place retrospectively. So that brings us to the next issue. So what is the status of the decision and the recommendations of the National Commission? Firstly, let's consider the status of the minister's decision to appoint the National Commission without consultation. Just briefly, it's my view that the minister's decision is an executive action and is not reviewable in terms of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. However, it does not mean there is no process available for this decision to be reviewed. The courts have noted that the principle of legality, which means that parties must act in terms of the law, is a well-established ground for review where there is no PAJA, where PAJA does not apply. So there's a process where the minister's decision can be reviewed on the grounds of legality. And the doctrine of legality basically means that it follows the principle of constitutional supremacy, and it means that the legislature or the executive may only exercise public powers and perform public functions as conferred to them by law. They do not have powers outside of this. In the matter under consideration, we know that there is no pending court review. So there is no judicial review process that has been initiated by any of the parties or a member of the public. The minister has on his own accord informed Parliament of this error. And even the minister and the committees are in agreement that there was an error, there is very little they can do outside the court process. This power to review and set aside the decision of the minister rests solely in the court. And this can be the authority for this can be found in the cases of Kirkland and the SABC case. The recent SABC case said that decisions merely cannot be set aside. It has to go through a proper review process. So as it stands, the minister's decision is not being contested in the judicial review process. So it is valid till it is contested. So it has legal consequences. The appointment process has legal consequences. The members of the National Council have been appointed in terms of the law. So they can function until such time that there is a judicial review process. Next question is, so what does that mean for the National Council? What is the status of the decision since some of the members were not properly appointed? Again, the decisions taken by the National Council was taken in good faith. They thought they were properly appointed and they were carrying out their functions in terms of the empowering legislation. Individual decisions have not, to my knowledge, been questioned for the lawfulness. And if they were an aggrieved party would have a course of action in terms of the provision of administrative justice act to question an individual decision. So as it stands, the National Council, as it can function within the empowering statute, and until the decision of the minister itself is reviewed, they are within their legal rights to continue operating under the empowering statute. Even if there is a review process, you must understand that it's not necessary for the court to invalidate the decision of the National Council. If it does come to that, we can ask for an order to limit the retrospective invalidity of the decisions of the National Council, because there will be many aggrieved members of the public who would be affected by a wholesale invalidation of these decisions. So, lastly, what is the recourse available to parliamentary committees? As you have gathered, there is no constitutional provision or any section in the empowering legislation that gives the committees any power to endorse the decision of the minister. So, within its own processes, within its legislative function, Parliament cannot endorse that decision. So, in conclusion, we know that the members of the Council, in terms of Section 83 to H, were not properly appointed. But until such time that this decision is reviewed and set aside, the minister's decision has legal consequences. The decisions of the National Council also has legal consequences until such time the court invalidates its appointment and its decisions. And lastly, Parliament and its committees has little recourse to remedy the shortcomings of the appointment process within its legislative powers. This process may only be undertaken by a court in terms of judicial review. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think at this time, Chair, we'll allow the members to any clarities or questions from this perspective. And members, if you need clarities or questions around this legal opinion, thank you.
Keep your wings, don't fly too high.
Well, Chair, with all respect, they remain advisors to us, and we may hold a different opinion. But thank you for the opportunity. Chair, two things. One is that in the final conclusion, it is stated that these committees have little recourse to remedy these shortcomings. As a matter of fact, from the outset, it must be stated that that indeed is not true, because Parliament in itself, in terms of its duty to oversee the actions of the executive, may come to the conclusion that we have no other option but to take this matter on review, judicially speaking. We are not the rubber stamp of the executive, and neither are we to turn a blind eye if the executive made grave errors in exercising its constitutional obligations. But be that as may, I would like the input of the legal advisors also as to the contents of Section 83.3b of the Correctional Services Act, which clearly states that the minister, if there are valid grounds for doing so, may terminate the appointment of a member of the council. And to my mind, it indeed is a valid ground to terminate the appointment of these four members, given the fact that there was no consultation process with the Committee of Parliament. I think from our side, it is simply not going to fly to say that, yes, okay, the minister made an error, but up until the point where somebody else, a member of the public or somebody who feels aggrieved by decisions taken by either this council or the parole board where some of these members serve, take the minister on review, and then it transpires that, as a matter of fact, no consultation took place with Parliament, then to our mind, this Parliament and these committees specifically and the individual members will sit with eggs on our faces. So given the fact that we are now aware of the situation, it must be remedied, either by us advising, in my our opinion, the minister that he must make use of his powers in terms of the Act, or by Parliament taking the decision to take this matter on review. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think just to get into the last point that is raising about the remedies. So I want to find out from the advisors, because part of the remedies in the general principles of the law is condonation. Part of the remedies, but looking at this matter and looking at the intention of the minister, one information that was not provided to legal advisors was that the minister had appointed those not on a permanent basis, it was just on a short-term basis. So I'm sure from where we're sitting, they're just left with either a month. So given that situation, I don't think we may have to support the what Honorable Horn is saying, that we need to advise the minister to terminate. Because from the advice, I think I agree with the fact that whatever decisions they've taken, they remain valid within the law. I appreciate that. And second, that it can't be the committee that can approach the court for the review. Because generally, we as the committee must look at the intention against which the minister had to take the decision. The intention was good, and generally, in terms of the general remedies, we need to generally condone. If the law is silent on the, according to what they say, but I know that the general remedies, condonation will always come in when there is such a problem. But I think we just need to allow the term, say, from where I'm sitting. Because left with a month or so to finish, then we start this process mero mutu. Thank you.
Positions which are very helpful, if you can address them.
Thank you, Chair. The first question of the Honourable Member was that the options available to Parliament. I specifically had said in the opinion that in terms of its legislative powers, so I was asked as to what Parliament can do, what committees can do, as sitting as Parliament. It does not preclude the decision to approach a competent court and have this decision set, reviewed and set aside. So my opinion is limited to the powers of the committee in terms of the constitution and rules. We do not have power to endorse the decision. But if a decision is made to have a protocol to review it, then that's within the competency of the committee, and already the necessary processes within Parliament need to take place. In terms of Section 83.3b, this section specifically says if there's valid grounds for doing so, the minister may terminate the appointment of a member. Just from a quick reading of this, I would say that the authors of the section do not envision such a situation where the appointment would have taken place outside the law or outside the empowering statute. This would seem to be related to where maybe a member of the National Council had misconducted himself or did something that may have violated the terms of their appointment. So I do not read the section to say that it's kind of a free-for-all where the minister can just use the section to invalidate the appointment and say, I didn't properly follow the process, so therefore you as an individual will be affected by that, while those four members were not part of the decision-making. So they also have rights. And just to invalidate it on this ground, I do not think there was the intention of the drafters of the section. To the Honourable Member Bongo, condemnation, my understanding of condemnation is related to time. So when you bring an application for condemnation, you would have to give reason as to why you had filed papers in court late or failed to keep within the time frame set out in a process. In this instance, there was a material error, because the minister failed to meet the requirement of the statute. So he failed a step before. He's not saying I came late or something. He failed to meet those requirements. So it's my view that condemnation doesn't have application in this matter. In terms of the time frame, and my understanding is that the National Council was appointed on the 1st of June for a period of 12 months. So their term is going to run out very shortly, and a new process will have to be undertaken. So in deciding whether to undertake a judicial review process, and that would be one of the factors to be considered, and it's an important factor because if a new process is started soon, then, you know, what are the implications of proceedings to the court? But that's a decision that has to be weighed up by members of the committee.
Members on my right.
Otherwise, co-chairperson, I think we have been largely clarified. I think we should bear in mind that our responsibility is to oversee the executive, not to do work for them. So if there's a need for judicial review in this matter, I don't think that it would be wise and advisable that we leave our work here to approach the courts. What we can do, if the need arises on the part of the minister to take the matter on review, then we will have to oversee that process and make sure that he does what he commits to do. But it is observed here that the term of these people is about to end. And if it's about to end, you may take the matter on review. By the time you are heard by the court, the people are no longer there. And that would be a waste of time and resources. But also, I think that we are custodians of the public interest. We have to weigh the damage that will be done by terminating these people a month before. And apparently, according to the legal advisor, the law does not even envisage such a termination. And I don't think that the skies would fall if we accept this very good legal opinion. And I guess it's our, as a committee, it's our responsibility to convey the position that emerges from here to the minister and give them an opportunity to apply their mind and decide what to do and let us know their course of action, and then we will oversee that course of action. But I don't think that on our side we should really take the matter further than saying we accept the legal position as explained to us. I don't think we need any further clarification. I see a hand next to Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's George Michalakis from NCOP. I just want to mention two things. The first is that I'm very concerned, and we must be cautious of not creating a precedent where in all committees, ministers go ahead, appoint people, and then come back to Parliament to ask for, like in the same way, with the suggestion of condemnation, etc. It's a very dangerous precedent to create. The second point that I just want to give my opinion on is, with regards to a court application, it will not take a long time. I'm not saying that we should go to court, but it would be by means of an application, and there is something like an urgent application. So it can be done in a very short time. But the main point is we must be very careful of creating precedents where we allow ministers to take decisions without consulting Parliament first. Yes, thank you.
I think also this should help us to understand that it's not only ministers who have a duty to do things timeously, but we ourselves have to do our work well and timeously.
because when the minister appeared before us to ask for condonation, why didn't we know that the law doesn't allow us to condone? We condoned ourselves. So it means the executive and parliament must both do their work. So I take your points, but I think we agree that we shouldn't go to court, because that is also going to include expenses, wasted costs. We leave this to the minister. I guess in our report to the minister will indicate that we are not really very happy with what happened. But you know, that is something that where your suggestion applies not only to our minister here, but the whole executive, and then we have a leader of government business. I think in our interactions there, we will try to emphasize that things must be done timeously to avoid situations like this one. But can we agree that, Honorable?
Chairperson, without reiterating what you have said, let me also acknowledge the input from the legal department. They have to say, luckily, some of us participated in the previous discussion. And if not mistaken, we are of the view saying there's little that the committee can do, even last time. And indeed, in terms of the advice that we get from the legal department, there's an emphasis to say there's little recourse from our side as the committee. And given, Chair, the submissions that have been made, that honestly speaking, it's not necessarily for us to create precedence, but we are more privy to say the material conditions on the ground would usually be a determination for us to arrive at a particular destination, particularly in this matter, Chair. If I say it's only a month left before the term of National Council lasts, to me, honestly speaking, it will be worthless, given what the legal advisers has put forth, that there's little that this committee can do, particularly on the basis of the legal basis of this matter. However, Chairperson, for future, just to really allay the fear of honorable member, perhaps in incidents like establishment of committees, the need, to me, honestly speaking, of having regulations that would always address this little chance that the committee is saying, you know, perhaps that is also what we can do in future to avoid a situation where things are happening and we are unable to take a measure as the committee. But however, Chairperson, honestly speaking, I would really concur with the suggestion that really let's rather leave this matter, but with understanding that it has happened just in front of all of us, and we couldn't act, unfortunately. So we cannot see ourselves working as firefighters when we have avoided to be more proactive in this case. So in that situation, I would really support what you are saying, that let's rather accept that we have equally failed in terms of executing our proactive oversight. Therefore, there is no way that we can pursue this matter fit. Thank you.
Yeah, just one more thing. At this stage, we're now engaging on the basis that the Honourable Bongo and the our other Honourable colleague has confirmed that there's a month left of the period or the term of this these four members. I would appreciate it if we can get the same information or advice from the department, because not to belittle the knowledge of our ANC colleagues, but I tend to not believe them always. So if somebody from the department can maybe confirm that that is indeed the case, I think that could assist.
Just believe in one another to the extent that we don't verify things. So I don't think there's anything wrong in asking for more information. But I'm very happy that the honorable members have persuaded you to accept that we should really
No, they didn't. I'm asking whether somebody from the department by sitting here behind us can confirm that that is indeed the position.
No, I can confirm that.
Okay, but you're also not from the department.
Honorable Bongo.
Thanks. I think your permission was quite proper to say that you are going to take the package legal advice to the minister and establish the next course of action. So it would arise from the report that the minister would be giving back to us. So I think Honorable Horn can be fine with that. Thanks.
I have a letter addressed to me by the minister. In terms of this letter, actually it's 3 months left. Now, but the suggestion that we should leave this matter to the minister still holds. Because if people have been appointed in June, now it's March, and then you go and terminate their membership. That may have more serious implications and cause much more damage than the damage, if any, which would result from their continuation until the end. But I think we agree that as this committee with no power to terminate them, and it's not advisable that we go to court, and therefore why don't we agree that we will communicate with the minister about the legal situation and ask him to advise us how he's intending to proceed, and we will exercise our oversight power over him to ensure that he does what he commits to do. Honorable Horn.
Yes, Chair, you say that we must sit back because of the consequences of terminating before the end of term. But there's another side to this argument, and that has been addressed in the legal opinion also, in that we are now acting with the knowledge that decisions taken by the parole board and the minister may be reviewed based purely on the fact that these members were not appointed validly. This morning as I was driving into Parliament, there was a news segment on the review application of Janusz Walusz. And quite probably, his legal advisors at this stage do not know that the advice of the parole board is probably compromised by the fact that some of these members of the council was not appointed in a valid way. But if they were to come to that knowledge, then obviously it will only strengthen their case. So to my mind, it is unacceptable for us to say that we're sitting with the knowledge that there's a situation where appointments was done in a compromised way, but we leave it to the minister. I accept the fact that we have no other recourse than to take it on judicial review, and it might be the majority's opinion that it's not really our task. We back at the situation where we may differ even as to what extent our powers of oversight goes. I think from our side, it must be clearly stated then that there is a minority opinion that the minister must act more decisively, even in terms of ATC 3B, and with all due respect to the legal advisors, I don't think their interpretation that the minister may only act to set aside the appointment if there's other extraneous factors that now make appointment invalid. This, to our interpretation, indeed gives the minister the opportunity to set aside the appointments which he made in an invalid way. We cannot be, from our side, part of a decision that may expose Parliament the situation where we are also put in the spotlight, as to say you sat with the knowledge that there was decisions made in an unlawful way, appointments made in an unlawful way, and you merely said to the minister, we're putting the ball back with a very soft volley into your court, deal with it. That's not the way a parliament should exercise its duties.
Honorable Mahapi and Honorable Bongo, just to say to you, the minister has more than one option in this matter. Should it be our business to tell the minister which option? Shouldn't we leave the matter to him to choose the option and oversee the implementation of the option? Honorable Mahapi.
Thanks. I was also going to say the same thing that earlier on, Honorable Hon suggested that we should say the minister should apply the provision that says termination. Of which to me is unfortunate because you can't really dictate for the minister based on the provisions of the Act itself. Chair, I was just saying it. This repetition, what Honorable Hon is saying against what we have said, it's equally the same thing, so that he's approaching it differently from how we're approaching it. So I was going to suggest, Chairperson, if you respect, can you conclude this matter the way you summed it up for us, then we conclude this matter.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think the fact that 3 months is left is actually giving us a good opportunity for the minister to can start advertising, because it's not like when you terminate today, what will happen? Let's say you terminate today, exactly what will happen? You leave a vacuum again. And it's an unintended consequence. So I think part of the advice we'll give them is that you must start the process, because the process of advertising is also a lengthy process in itself. And that's how we're trying to remedy the whole situation. Thanks.
Chairperson, I don't think that we are dealing with a question of numbers. And I don't think that the conclusion is based on numbers. It's really a question of what is the superior argument in the circumstance. We are dealing with the interpretation of the law, and we have had expert advice from highly qualified and capable lawyer. So I think let's conclude the matter in this way, but I'm happy that Honorable Kroc and Honorable Hon have raised other aspects of the same issue, so that we conclude the matter knowing two sides of the story, and it's only that we have to say in the circumstances.
Sorry, Chief, on a point of order, Honorable Hon. No, I was asking on a point of order, what did you call me, Chairperson? That's all I wanted to know. Be it as it may, as you say, numbers is on your side. You think numbers don't matter, but you have the superior argument, but obviously you equate numbers to having the superior argument. Let me just request that our official opposition to this decision be recorded in a minute, please.
So that you are right, because Parliament by its nature has a majority and minority parties, and the Parliament also take decision either by consensus or by voting. So where does the minority positions arise here? Maybe if they do arise, the minutes will reflect what has taken place. I don't think we need to go to the extent of recording minorities.
Sorry, then in that case we please request that the matter be put to a vote.
Sir, I'm actually coming with a different opinion to say that you actually made the motion earlier to say that we should welcome the opinion referred to the minister. And as we refer to the minister, we'll then also indicate the opinions that have been expressed by the opposition on how to move forward. As the minister then makes a decision on how to deal with the matter.
Okay.
will correct me if I'm misguided. I thought that what we wanted to do here to receive the opinion, to clarify us, and if we need further clarification, call for another meeting, but it appears that there's no further clarification that we need. There is a course or courses of action that must be undertaken, not by ourselves, but by the executive, and our duty is to oversee what the executive does. So there's nothing to vote for here. There's absolutely nothing to vote for.
Now, Chair, with all respect, due respect, if you're going to write to the minister to tell him that this is tabled, discussed, and this is how the committee feels, and he indeed has made a decision. And if that is the case, then the opposition of the Democratic Alliance to this decision must be recorded. If we're not going to act in any way, then all well and fine. But if there's going to be communication with the minister from this joint committee side, then a decision, even by implication, has been taken, and if that is the case, then our opposition must be recorded.
Chairperson, I strongly believe whoever that will also recapture hearing would find it hard, especially given that Honorable Horn was the first to suggest that led by the minister prescribing to him a provision that says he had an opportunity to terminate. Then thereafter, a popular view came out to say, much as we would be acting within our prescript of the role of the committee, there's in no way that we can dictate to the minister. However, this information, inclusive of views that I hear in terms of the legal advice, would be taken further to the minister. That is why the honourable member went further to say whatever view that emanated out of this, including the views of the opposition, let it just be carried further to say the view is that they were of a view that you terminate. I'm just saying there's no way where we differ, and I'm wondering what is going to be captured as opposition. Position in this case, because we acted on the basis of the views. The only thing you can't get better to say we cannot dictate, but however, we take the minister board on the particular view of the committee, which is almost the same of what Honorable Ron suggested.
Well, before I come to you, is it also not perhaps correct that we wanted to be clarified on the legal position, and we have been clarified? So maybe what we need, therefore, is to refer that legal opinion that we accept to the minister and then see what he does with it. If he does nothing, that's when we come in. So there's nothing to decide except to reject or accept the legal opinion.
Chairperson, you should not be intimidated by the tall of a hand. I raised my hands earlier, and I thank you very much.
Yes, you will, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was of the view that we have received the legal opinion of the institution, and we have deliberated on it. We came to the determination that we are standing by this particular recommendation. What we need to do ourselves as a committee, as a joint committee, is to then forward this recommendation, as you correctly said, to the minister and ask a report as to what is he going to do with this. And we will take it from that particular, whether he comply or not comply, we will then read from whatever we will be responding to ourselves. Thank you very much.
I wish you had said that before I summarize, because that's precisely how the matter stands. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. So we're now going to sit back and wait for the minister to give us an answer. As I said earlier, again, we are creating a dangerous precedent. There is an onus on this committee to, when it knows that the minister did not act in terms of the regulations of the law, to make sure that it is done in the right and proper way. Honourable Warren made the suggestion earlier, before it came to light, that these members of the committee have 3 months left. It was first said 1 month, and then it became 3 months. So,
What I'm saying is, again, that we are creating a very dangerous precedent. On the point of Honourable Moati that we are in a broad agreement, it's relative what broad agreement means. There's a clear difference of opinion there. We are of the opinion, which is very different from the one that the majority party is taking, that we should not simply refer this to the minister and sit back and wait for him to make a decision. In that case, a decision is being made by this committee, Honourable Chairperson, and if a decision is made by this committee and there is members who differ from that decision and they demand a vote, then you as Chairperson, with all due respect, are obliged by the rules of this committee to grant that vote, or at least to record the minority's opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't understand whether the DA is or the members are self-defending in terms of opposing. Because here, we ask the opinion, legal opinion, not to... If you said this legal opinion is not right, you can say this legal opinion is not right. Only, we are not here to say, to take any decision. No decision are taken here. Which decision? Then the only thing that we are suggesting that, okay, there is a legal opinion in front of us. Can we take the legal opinion to the minister? And we cannot stress the minister. We can't do that. The only thing that we can do is to, yes, minister, there is this legal opinion. Then what? What decision can we take here? And what decision are we supposed to take here? We are here to listen for the legal advice. I think we are that opposing in terms of opposing. I don't know.
Let's allow one more speaker, and you will be the last speaker, and then we'll move forward.
Chairperson, I don't know why are we splitting hairs, because it's very evident that we only came here to listen to the legal opinion that has been expressed. And if we think our rights as political parties to express our views, and we have an opportunity of doing so, and the decision is then, we've had the legal opinion, we're referring the legal opinion as a committee to the minister, accompanied by the views. What is wrong with that, and why are we supposed to be voting? What are we voting for? Because we're not making any decision. It's just an administrative process that we are actually completing now.
Let me tell you that here we have an opportunity to rectify something. And the first opportunity to do so must be given to the minister. And it is not our competence to say to the minister how, which way he should choose. But it is our duty to oversee the implementation of that choice. Can you address us?
Thank you, Chairperson. The co-chairperson, in the first place, seems, with all due respect, not to have listened to my arguments properly. I did not once refer to this legal opinion and whether I accept it or not. That was not raised by myself. What I said was that the moment this committee makes a decision, and my colleague to the right from National Assembly specifically used the word decision, the decision is taken to refer it to a minister. That mere decision, whether it's administrative of nature or not, that constitutes a decision of this committee. And once there is a decision, an action step, then it has to either be unanimous or there will be a dissenting view. All I'm asking is that the dissenting view be recorded. That's all.
Great. This opinion is a document of Parliament. It's an opinion from Parliament. Whether we refer it or not, the ministers have the right to access it. So all that we are doing here is that we have had a briefing, we accept that the correctness of that opinion, and it's up to the minister to decide how to deal with that. But if he doesn't, we have a responsibility to hold him to account. So we can't take this matter further, Honourable Horn, because I'm a Democrat, although I'm not from the Democratic Party. I will allow you to speak.
Okay, let's make it very easy then. From our side, we propose that we not only refer the legal opinion to the minister, but we also advise as a joint committee the minister that we are of the opinion that he must make use of his powers in terms of Section 83(3)(b) of the Correctional Services Act to terminate the appointment of these four council members who was appointed invalidly. That's an official proposal from my side.
This is a dictatorship in a democratic parliament. The interpretation of the law makes different options open to the minister. And it's not our competence to say to the minister which one he must follow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to second the proposal by Honourable Moore. Thank you.
I've already...
Chairperson, I think Honourable Horn is in a way trying to sum up their view. Let's accept their view that will be forwarded to the minister together with the opinion.
A point of order, Chair.
I'll also listen to you. We are a committee of parliament established in terms of the constitution and the law, and we are going to do things lawfully. The law says, as presented, there are options that the minister can take. Now, it is not within our competence to tell the minister which option to follow, but it is our duty to oversee the implementation of his choice. So we can't take the matter beyond that.
Chair, but with all due respect, even that, if that is the position, I've made a proposal. It was seconded. What should happen now in terms of the other law, which he calls the Rules of Parliament, is that you should put my proposal as seconded to vote.
The duty of with the law. I'm not going to pursue things that are in conflict with the law. So,
please, Chairperson, because earlier on we had the legal input presented to us, and part of the recommendation was to say there's little that the committee can do. Hence, we opted for a view of saying let's refer the matter to the minister. So I don't see any reason why must we indulge into voting on a matter that is far beyond our responsibility as stipulated in terms of the provision of the recommendation.
Honourable members, thank you very much for a very constructive discussion and which was enlightening. That closes the business of the day, and have a nice day in the city of Cape Town.
Yeah, I'm going to go.